What's up, bookworms? It's your host, Stevie, and we are back with another episode. Oh, it's been a long week.
It has been a long week. I'm tired already. I learned how to do TikTok transitions, people. Go check out my TikTok. They're legit.
I legit will tell you that she's been on here for the last hour doing that.
I'm not even joking. It took me a whole freaking day to learn how to do them, but I got them now. I'm about to be TikTok famous. Joking. So, Stevie. In the book world, what's going on over there?
Let's say when you're hearing this, it will be next week. So we're going to go over those releases because they're the most exciting. Gina, I'm going to butcher her last name because I'm not really sure how to say it. Azy or Azzy, whatever, which way you want to say it, is releasing Sweet Talker, which is her new hockey romance. And it's amazing.
I haven't read it because I'm not a blogger. I don't get arcs.
And then the other one that I just finished reading to is Alexa Chase, and that's Unraveled, and that is an Everyday Heroes book. Who doesn't love a hot firefighter?
By next week, I will be... This is going live on next Friday, right?
No.
When is it going live?
Tuesday.
Okay, by next Tuesday, I will be done with Blind Pass. So we're done, ladies and gentlemen. We're done.
Get so ready. When we record next week, it will be a party.
Exactly. So just prepare
bottles.
I got champagne. About to be real bougie in here.
Real bougie.
I have nothing for the book world because I've just been like sucked into my own manuscript at the moment. However, Democrat, Republican, whichever, communist, whatever, socialist, whatever line you fall on, today is a big day. We have the 46th president in the is inaugurated today. So it's a big day for America. It always is.
Come after us.
Yeah, I'm not going to get too political. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, whatever. But like, I am saying that, you know, it's a big day. So enjoy this inauguration day or don't. If you don't want to, that's fine too. But and I just want to say that whether you support or not, I feel like it's a huge day for women. You know, like it's a big day for us. It's the first female vice president that we've ever had. And I just think it's amazing. Whether you are a supporter or a non-supporter, I think it's super cool. So celebrating to that, because women in power meant girl power. And I didn't even watch the inauguration because the news makes me nervous. I'm just like ready to see, like, I just know that in like 2 months, everything's kind of like chill right now. You know, like it's kind of, well, I mean, the inauguration was a little escalated, but I feel like everything's a little chill right now with everything at the moment. And I'm just waiting for like the first confirmed zombie. Like, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it. And listen, I have a theory. This is not a podcast about theories, but if we did have a podcast and it was about conspiracy theories, I would run it, okay? So, I have a theory that if the zombies are to, you know, be a thing, they need to start in Florida, because in order to reach anything else, they have to go through some yee-yee states, like all Alabama, Louisiana, Georgia, Missouri, Mississippi. All of them, they got to go through them mofos first. And listen, they're crazy. They eat roadkill. So
I will say, and it's funny that you say this, because Taryn Elliott, who is also an author, has a Supernatural television show podcast.
Oh, okay, cool.
And I am here like for a TV it. Show?
Supernatural?
Yes.
Oh, I love Supernatural.
Yes. She is on there talking about all things Jensen Ackles.
I love him. God, he's hot.
I feel like, look, she might be coming on the podcast in April and March.
We'll talk all things Supernatural. Do you know he has two children, Arrow and Archer?
He has three children.
Well, I mean, he has two that's names are Arrow and Archer.
Yes, twins. They're twins.
And the other one's name is like Lennox, isn't it? Something yeah, Lenny?
Her name is JJ.
Okay.
And he is married to the girl who played on One Tree Hill.
Brooke?
No, Rachel.
Oh, okay.
He played Rachel.
We've taken a left turn into Supernatural and
We could sit here for hours and talk about this television show, guys, because it is one of my favorite shows.
But yeah, I don't think that I really have anything like book world wise. I know that we have, I am so excited.
It's practically bouncing out
for today hair. Because our special guest makes me want to cry. Like, she's one of my idols. Like, she went in my head when somebody asked me, when I tell myself that I want to be a successful author and I envision what a successful author looks like, it's her.
And I'd like to pinpoint a story here about when we first booked her, because they did not know that I did this. I went on from my blog email and sent her an email asking if she would like to join us, and of course she said yes. And then that meant I surprised her with MJ, and she freaked out for about 10 minutes.
Listen, on a side note, it's going to get super emotional at the beginning of this podcast because I am going to thank her for something that she did that I know that she's probably not going to remember, because she probably gets like flipping 9,000 billion emails a day. But I emailed a slew of authors when I first started to publish Love and Hockey. And because I had no idea what I was doing, right? Because this is just like a new world. And I was like, oh, I don't know what to do. I emailed her. I don't know why. I emailed her because somebody had mentioned that she gives good advice on that stuff. She has stuff on YouTube to help new authors. And so I emailed her like a shot in the dark, okay? And she emailed me back like 2 hours later with like a flip ton of shit that I could do and like helpful tips and tricks and stuff like that. And like, literally, it helped me so much. And I just thought that somebody that like, that popular and that, you know, established still makes time to email back little old me. So yeah, it made me super emotional, and I'm gonna thank her for that. So y'all just
also need another good author that does that is Molly McAdams.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually does like a seminar thing on her website.
Yeah.
With that, for new writers and new authors.
Yeah.
And it's a self-publishing class.
I don't know. I just think it's cool. I think any author that is established in a busy bee like that, to just be able to make time to help people who are just starting out, I think is incredible. I aspire to be that kind of author. I am that author. Feel free to message me whenever. I mean, I'm not as popular as Candy, but I can help in some situations.
I do want to tell a story, though, about a really good book I read the other day.
Okay, go ahead.
So, this book is not out yet. It comes out February 5th.
You better not snitch.
I'm not going to spoil it. But it is by Kristen Turnage, and it's called The Edge of Happiness. And let me just tell you, when I sob, I sobbed. I full-blown ugly cried during this book. And it was so good.
What's a trope?
That's a tough one. I don't know if I can pinpoint a trope in that.
Okay. All right.
She moves to her family's farm. Well, into this like country, and her family has a bee farm. And
is it a small town romance?
So it's small town romance meets what can I give away that won't give away the whole thing?
What can I say without giving it away?
She has a lot of issues.
Okay, cool.
She went through a lot of shit before she went there, and there was a reason why she went there. And in return, she found herself, and it was like a coming home story.
Yeah.
Her family grew up, her dad grew up there, and that was where her parents went a lot, and it was really hard for her, and because her mom died when she was three. So... But it's definitely a really, really, really good book. And I hope that on February 5th, people go buy it, because I loved it.
Sounds good.
And it just had me sobbing. So please have Kleenex ready when you go to read it.
But yeah, so like I said, I have no, like, book world information because I've been in a hole. But I am super excited to get to talk to our guest. I am, like, a little nervous. My hands are sweaty. But let's hop on over there and get to talking to her. Candy Steiner is a best-selling author and whiskey connoisseur living in Tampa, Florida. Best known for writing emotional roller coaster stories, she loves bringing flawed characters to life and writing about real, raw romance in all its forms. No two Candy Steiner books are the same, and if you're a lover of angsty, emotional, inspirational reads, she's your gal. When Candy isn't writing, you can find her reading books of all kinds, talking to her extremely vocal cat, spending time with her friends and family. She enjoys live music, traveling, anything heavy in carbs, beach days, movie marathons, craft beer, and sweet wine, not necessarily in that order. Thank you so much for joining us on this podcast, Candy Steiner.
Yay, and the crowd goes wild.
We need like one of those clapper things.
Yeah.
Yes, we do this soundboard where it's like claps, audience goes wild.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really stoked to be here.
Thank you. So before we get started with asking you questions, I need to say something to you.
Okay. This may not bring tears out now.
No, I'm not going to cry. So I just wanted to say thank you, mostly just because you're a very big, like, inspiration for me as, like, a new author. And so when I was, like, first publishing my first book last year, I emailed you because I emailed, like, a bunch of authors. And I emailed you not really thinking that you might respond because obviously I feel like you're very busy. You get, like, 8,000 emails a day or something. And you email me back, like, an hour later with, like, a bunch of really cool tips and, like, really good ideas and helpful things. And so I just really wanted to say thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome. I appreciate you thanking me. It's something I love to do. And I felt this way ever since I started writing, that I really do believe as writers and as women that we're stronger together, right? We're stronger when we share what we know and we build each other up. And so I try my best to live through that every single day. So even when I'm busy, I like to help when I can. So I hope that you found something helpful in the email that I sent. And how's your writing journey going?
It is going really good. I'm about 7 months strong and I'm working on my fourth book now. So it's going really well. And yeah, so I just really wanted to thank you for that because you're one of the, I think I messaged like 10 different authors and you're one of the only three that emailed me back. So I just like, I was like, gosh, she's such an angel. And I just thought it was kind of amazing that somebody that I feel like is so established and I know that, you know, is busy doing things could take time to like email little old me back. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
But we're gonna move on. We're gonna move on from the emotional stuff, but I told her I needed to thank her publicly so people knew that I did it. So
I love it.
We're gonna move on to book questions. Cool. Narrowing down the books that I wanted to ask you about was nearly an impossible feat. But I've narrowed it down to three, and then we're going to talk about your new release. If you could give us a little information about that when we get to the end. But we're going to talk about three that I feel like were personally like my favorites.
Sure.
So we're going to start with A Love Letter to Whiskey, which I feel like is iconic.
Of course. That's like the Candy Steiner book. Like when you hear my name, I feel like that's the book. If you don't know me at all, you've at least heard of that book.
Yes. Literally, I was telling people, I was like, you know, Candy Steiner is going to be on the podcast. And like, oh, she's really popular. She's really popular. She wrote the whiskey book. And I was like, yes. That's right. Definitely her. So this book, so Jamie and Bea, I think, oh my God, like there's just so much to unpack in this novel. And I thought it was just such a powerful, like you wrote it in such a powerful way. Like where did or what inspired the metaphor for like whiskey and Jamie? Like where did that come from?
Yeah, so it really did start, all of it started, this whole book started from that metaphor. I remember just being in a situation at that time in my life where I sort of felt the burn of love, if that makes sense. Like I was just sort of in a tumultuous time in my life and I found myself drinking whiskey and contemplating where I had found myself in my love life. And I just thought, man, falling in love is a lot like drinking whiskey. And I was a little intoxicated, right, at the time. And so as I start taking notes, it just starts getting deeper and deeper. And I think about, you know, falling in love and how it's like getting drunk and then the hangover and then just so much more that goes into whiskey and how whiskey is made. And anyway, it started to flourish. And before I knew it, I saw B before I saw Jamie.
Yeah.
B started really talking to me and kind of telling me who she was and what she wanted and the things that meant the most to her. And then Jamie started coming into view. And I knew before I started writing this book that it was going to make me sick to write it. Like I could just,
oh my God, I love
that. I could just tell when they were in my head. And I mean, you will know this as a writer, you know, sometimes you have characters that are born in your brain, right? And they feel like they're a part of you. They feel like, you know, they're just, they hit close to home. And these characters not only did that, but they took over and became these people that I never expected them to be, but like in the best way. And I knew, I wrote that first chapter and the last line of it is, you know, I saw him first, but he saw her, right? Yeah. And,
and it's just, and like I just already with the heavy stuff.
Yes. And also, you know, this was my ode to myself, to my best friends, to my family, to strangers, because I don't know a single woman who has not had a Jamie, a whiskey in their life. And what I mean by this is I don't care if you ended up with them. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about at some point you had someone in your life who felt like they were yours, but they weren't, or that you had some sort of relationship with them, but it wasn't a clearly defined one, right? And there is no worse place to be than in that muddled mess, but it's also addicting, like so addicting.
Absolutely. And I feel like that's just like where the stereotypical attraction to bad boys come from. I just I can, and when you talk about it, I can like genuinely feel it. I feel like Jamie and B were like two separate emotions that you had compiled into like human beings as you were writing them. And so my friend recommended, this is the first book I ever read by you. And like my friend recommended it to me. And I read it and I was, I literally remember I have chill bumps thinking about it. I cried like a baby because exactly what you said. I feel like every woman has a whiskey, and like I did. And I was like, this is the most emotional, heart-wrenching thing I have ever read in my life. And so, yeah, it was just like a super powerful reading experience for me. And this book deals with moral obligations when it comes to like love and relationships. And I know what it felt like for me reading it because I have been a bee. And so like, what did it feel like for you to be there in that spot, like to be both of them?
Well, I mean, I understand the feeling as well, right? And that was part of what I set out to do, was to capture how messy a relationship can get, especially because the human emotions are so volatile, right? Like none of us are stable. None of us, especially when we're younger, we don't have our lives figured out. I mean, we literally spend our entire lives just trying to figure out who we are. It is like a lifelong journey. So when I'm writing about the obligation of like being in a relationship with somebody, but then what happens when this person who you have an undeniable chemistry with just keeps showing up. And it's like, yeah, I know I should say no to this person. I know that's the right thing to do, but every part of my body, all of the molecules that make up who I am are attracted to this human being who like, for all intents and purposes, I should not be with, but I can't help but have my life revolve around them. And I will say to read this book, right? You have to either be young or remember what it's like to be young, because, you know, I have had readers who are, you know, in their 50s and 60s who have read this book and they get so frustrated, even 30s and 40s, they get frustrated with the games that Bea and Jamie play with each other. But when you're young,
that's exactly what happens. You break up and you get back together and you break up and you get back together. And that's what makes you love it so much, is like that toxicity that you know is bad for you, but you love it anyways.
Yes.
Literally, oh my gosh. My life.
So the scene that I wrote that I will always remember where I was and how I remember it like flying out of my fingertips. Like I think I blacked out and woke up on the other side of the scene was at the bonfire.
Oh my gosh.
And I just remember her storming out of the bonfire and she's going like out into the parking lot and Jamie's following her. And this explosive scene happens where it's just like, he finally is just like, I can't let you go. You can't, like, this thing between us is not going away, no matter how we try. And it's like this moment, I will never forget it. And I think that's what makes this book stick with my readers and stick with me for so long, for years, right? Mm-hmm. Is because of that powerful toxicity that we have all experienced and we can all relate to.
Exactly. And I think what I love the most about this book is that I feel like girls everywhere got their happily ever after with their Jamie that they always wanted. Because I mean, I feel like the reality of it is like most of the time you don't end up with that Jamie. Like I didn't end up with Jamie. And so it's like, this was like a rewrite of my life. It was like, this is my happy ever after. If he would have been, you know, how Jamie would have been, like, you know, if they would have matured together, kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And so I was like, yes, thank you so much for just ripping my heart out and like torching it. But yeah, I love that book. It's iconic. I reread it sometimes when I need a good cry. And so yeah. Also, PS reader, like listeners, the reason Stevie is being super quiet right now, but she's taking all of the reading questions. So don't think that I'm like over top. I understand I talk a lot, but like, this is not the situation. So moving on to The Wrong Game.
Even
in the books that I feel like are a little bit, I wouldn't even say rom-commy because they're all angsty. Like even in the books that I thought were gonna be funny, like, you know, like a soft rom-commy, you were like, no, sorry. Like it's not funny. This is a very emotional book as well. And I was like, this is great. Here I come from like literally using a whole box of tissues to like to crying even more. So Zach and Gemma, I really have wanted to know, like, where did this idea and this like meet cute come from? Like, it's so genius. Like, who even thinks that like I am going to meet somebody and then I'm going to take them to season tickets to a football game? Like what, like, where did that even come from?
Okay. So I love taking baths. That's like my jam, right? Mm-hmm. And when I, at this time in my life, when I was plotting, I wasn't even meaning to plot, but when the idea struck me, I was living in an apartment in downtown Tampa. I was like, I had been divorced for about a year at this time. I was really like secure in who I was. And I felt like, you know what? I think I'm like ready to date. I think I'm ready to like really try dating somebody. And I'm sitting in the bathtub and I'm thinking about dating and how crazy it is and how I've been out of the game for so long. And I am a season pass holder for the Tampa Bay Bucks. And I just thought as I'm sitting there, man, wouldn't it be so awesome to take a guy to a football game? Like, what a great first date. And like, you would totally steal their heart away if they're sports lovers. Uh-huh. And then I'm like, oh man, on the apps, that would set me apart. I would be like, oh, hey, come to a Bucks game with me. And then I said, scratch all that. I don't even care about doing this for myself. Now I'm thinking about a book. And I just started going. Gemma came into my mind and her story, her backstory, which is, that's where the feelings come from, right? This book is, it's so painful in that respect into what she's been through. But I loved writing this book because it starts with such a powerful emotional prologue. And then the very next chapter is like Gemma and her hilarious best friend, Belle.
Just, oh my
like,
God.
This chick. Just like walking to the bar. Right. And then it kicks off so quickly. It's like, she meets Zach and Zach's like, let me be your practice round. Right. And that was what made this book, was that he was just supposed to be the pregame, the practice round, like just to get her toes wet. And then he hangs out with her one night and is like, I cannot let this girl go on another date with another dude and I will figure out a way. So he buys the season tickets next to her and just shows up when she's there with another date. Like,
oh, how dedicated. I want a man to do that for me. Right. Like, Jesus. I mean, like really genuinely, like one time we've met, we've hung out, and then you buy a season ticket next to me. Like, what even is life, honestly? And I think you did okay, like I both loved and hated this emotion I had in my heart, for Gemma's situation, because it's like, you made me feel sorry for, I'm not gonna be spoily, but you made me feel sorry for said guy, but you also made me hate him.
Yeah.
So I was like, I want to literally die, but like not. So also,
this is another book too. I can tell your brand of angst just from these first two books that you've mentioned, right? Because you love the games. You love the games just like I love the games. And the way that we love to sort of challenge those who we have affections for, right? Like, again, this is not a spoiler, but there's a scene where Belle steps in as Gemma's best friend when Gemma's being stupid, right? And Gemma is just like, oh, I don't want to fall in love. I'm trying to keep this guy at a distance. And Belle is like, okay, sure. So she shows up to the game with Zach.
I was like, to be yes, like, girl, yes.
She's like, oh, well, you said you're done, right? Like, you don't want to date him. So it's totally fine that I'm here with him. And Gemma's like fuming, right? Because she cares about it. Oh, I love it.
I mean, I think, so like even the first, so like Love and Hockey, the first book I ever wrote, it was like testing soulmates. Like, how far could you push? Like, there was an age gap between them. So it was like one of those like bouncy, forthy, backy things or whatever. It was very like an angsty book. And I wanted to like test how far you can take soulmates, you know, before they like crash into each other, you know, like how long can you test the faith of time before like eventually fate is just like, fine, we give up, be together. Jesus.
Yes.
So that's, and you do that in your writing. And I think that's why I really love it. Like if a book doesn't make me cry, I don't want to read it again. Like I want to cry. Somebody like, please. And Stevie laughs at me all the time because she reads like Secret Baby and like soft rom-com-y things. And I'm like, no, I need to cry. I need a good cry.
Well, no, I
love that.
Occasionally. You cry occasionally.
No, all the time.
So, Zach is, I really loved his character. I think he's able to push Gemma, but he's also like super in tune with his own feelings. And he's not like your typical alpha. And you have a part in there where he's talking about how like he's a full-blown feminist, you know, like that's how his parents raised him. And I was like, yes sir. And so it's like, that your plan the entire time for him is to have him be like more of that like uncommon alpha male?
No, he totally took over. Like when I first wrote him, I mean, I think you can tell in that first scene at the bar, right? Like, he's just kind of like this, like, he knows he's hot. He knows, like, he's, you know, whatever. And he's just kind of like, he's super confident, super flirty. Like, oh yeah, let me be your practice round. So it's like, I'll take you to the game, whatever.
Yeah.
And as I'm writing him, and I get, it wasn't until I got inside his head that I realized how much deeper his story was, right? Because he has tragedy that he's faced in his life in a completely different way, not necessarily in a relationship, but more so in his love for football and giving up that dream for his family. And
his younger brother, oh my God.
His brother.
Sitting at the dinner table, I literally almost spit my drink out. I was like, this is iconic. This is amazing.
If I could pick one of my books to be made into a movie, I really do think I would pick The Wrong Game. Like, I just feel like it would be such a great movie, and I would love to see it.
I've never watched or read anything like that ever. It would be perfect. For real.
We need to get Passion Flicks on board.
For real. Netflix. Screw Passion. We need Netflix. Somebody get on the phone. But yeah, so I really love this game, and I really love this book, and I just really liked how the characters were both like compatible but also opposites, and the way they like tugged and pulled and then finally like coming together to, you know, have their happily ever after. So I really loved that one. And the last one we're going to talk about is, I hope I say this right. I have a Southern accent and everything comes off like I say it wrong. Revelry? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, okay. Revelry. Yeah. Okay. Cool. I know it's a hard word even for me to say. And anytime I'm like talking about it, I have to really slow down. I'm like, revelry, because I want to say revelry.
That word. Let's just call it the book that stole my soul. Okay. Oh. So Wren and Anderson are iconic. I love them. I am using the word iconic way too much. I need a dictionary. Okay.
I love this. I feel like a legend in your presence, and I am living for it.
You are literally a legend. Like, I'm not even joking. So what inspired the idea of writing like a divorcee woman renting a cabin in like the literal middle of nowhere? And like, you know what? This is where she's going to fall in love. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah. So, so the first, I actually got inspired by the location. I went to Gold Bar, Washington, the summer of 2016. I went with my best friend. Her brother had a cabin out there and they do a giant pig roast. And I met all his friends and all these people who make up this little cabin town. And I was like, I am obsessed with you and these people and this town. And I was going through a lot of difficult emotions with my marriage at the time. Mm-hmm. And I just started thinking about like, what a cleansing place to be, what a place to like really find yourself by this river and in this charming little town and everything.
Yeah.
And I just sort of like wrote down, I remember writing in my phone, girl goes to cabin after divorce to find herself and finds love instead. And I closed it and I just like never really thought about it again until I actually got divorced a few months after that. It was like one of those things that was brewing that I just didn't realize the eruption was so close, right? Like the volcano had been grumbling and I just didn't realize. And I found myself, I was publishing a love letter to whiskey as my divorce was happening. And when it finalized, I found myself thinking about that book and thinking about Gold Bar. And so I asked my best friend's brother if I could rent his cabin and he was like, I will let you stay for free. I know, and I flew out, and it's crazy that we're talking today. I know this isn't going to air until later, but the day that we're talking, and it has been exactly 4 years since I went, like 4 years ago today, I went to the cabin in Gold Bar with a blank sheet of paper, right? And I locked myself in there for a week and I wrote the first half of Revelry. And for me, there were a lot of things going into this book, right? Like, of course, there was a lot of me coming out in Ren. How could there not be when I was so close to the situation? But also it was more than that. Like Anderson ended up stealing the show for me. And I was so pulled into who he was as a character. And then all the characters in the town just took on a life of their own. Okay, and they
talk about them. Don't worry.
Yes. It sort of became like, I remember writing it and especially toward the end, talking to my really great friend, Stacey Hart, and being like, girl, I don't know if I can end this book with them being together. Like, I don't know if that's the right choice for Rin. I almost feel like at this point in her life, she doesn't need to be in another relationship. And she was like, this is where you've got to separate yourself from your character because you don't feel ready for a relationship right now, but that's not who your character is. So slip into Ren and really ask yourself where she is. And at the minute I did, I was just like, oh my God, it was just this light bulb moment. So anyway, that's where it came from. 4 years ago today, I flew out, stayed by myself in this snowy little cabin on the river. And I just dreamed this book to life.
It's so poetic. I love how like real and raw and like intense, like the way you and like passionate you are when you talk about your books. And like, I feel you were very in tune with your, I personally don't know. I empathize with that feelings that you were going through, but I feel like you were super in tune with yourself in order to create such characters that were so relatable. Like, I feel like if they walked into a bar, I'd be like, I know who they are.
Yes, right? Like you feel like they're real people. That's the best thing about writing. Except I kind of feel like a crazy person when I talk about it. Because it's like, they're like, but you made this person up and you're talking about them like they are like a human. And I'm like, right, because to me, they're not like in my head. They're not just me. They are real people, you know?
Exactly. So ma'am, let's talk about the ending of this book, okay? Like, it literally ripped my heart out of my chest, like, of happiness. So, Mama Vaughn is, like, I could, if there were, like, awards for, like, show stealer in a book, it's her. She is amazing. And like, I loved that ending. I loved that you gave her, like, her own little happy ever after. I literally was like crying. Like when it was happening, I was like, oh my God, no. I was like, oh my God, this is not happening. And so like, did that like come as you were writing it? Or like when you were talking about how like you had to step aside and like figure out what Ren wanted, were you also trying to figure out what Mama Vaughn needed?
Yeah, you know, so Mama Vaughn, she really did steal the show. She, I don't know if you know this about me. You might if you've been following me for a while, but my mom's name is LaVon and everybody calls her Mama Vaughn. That's where I got the name for the character. And so a lot of the advice that Mama Vaughn gives Rin in this book is like directly verbatim words that my mother told me. And it's like things my mom is an angel. Like, she is the true legend, if we're being honest. Like, she is the reason I'm able to do what I do. And you know, what I loved about Mama Vaughn was that she was so sassy and feisty and sure of herself and confident, but she also had regrets in her life too. And Bo being one of them, right? And she lost her babe. So for me, it was like, she was so instrumental in Rin and Anderson's happiness that I couldn't end the book without just giving the reader a glimpse of like, hey, Mama Vaughn gets hers too. You know, like she...
I was like, yes. I was like, you're never too old to have your happily ever after. I literally cannot deal.
And that's what that was the huge thing, right? Is that I feel like there's this misconception, especially when we're younger, that like, if we are not married by the time we're 23, we're like washed up and we're never going to find love. And the more we creep towards 30 or 40 or whatever, it's like we become more depressed over not finding our soulmate. But the truth is that you can find them and lose them and find them again, as was the case in A Love Letter to Whiskey. Sometimes you don't find them until later in life when you've lived and, you know, gone through it. And so, yeah, I think that for me, Mama Vaughn was a lot of things, but most, I guess, like importantly, an ode to my mother and a sincere and heartfelt thank you to her for all the great advice she's given me in my life.
I love that. And I mean, like you said, it's just like, especially when you come from a small town, like I have come from, like I've been raised in like the same town in Southwest Virginia my entire life. I just moved out of there. Thank Jesus. But, and I mean, I respect the town. It made me who I was, but it's also the kind of place where it's like, if you do anything different than like going to a community college, getting married and having a child immediately after, it's like, you have failed at life. Yep. And so I told people, I was like, I'm going to be an author. Like, and I knew that from like, when I was a kid, like I knew that. I was like, I know that's what I'm going to be one day. So when I was like really trying to pursue it and really like writing these books, and I told people, you know, hey, this is what I'm doing. They're like, oh, that's neat. But what are you really doing? And I was like, I cannot with any.
So, I feel like we are kindred spirits, because I grew up in small town Oklahoma and it was like the exact same thing. I knew as a kid that I wanted to be a writer, and like, I feel like everybody was like, oh yeah, like sure you will be, right? But it's not until you get out of the town and sort of start to make things happen that, you know, that they're like, oh wow, you're actually doing something different. Weird.
It's like, yeah, you can do that. It's cool, isn't it? I think Rin did that on her own terms, like going, like you said, like she went to kind of go find herself again and ended up finding, you know, love and Anderson, and Anderson ended up finding like forgiveness that I don't think he ever saw coming.
I know. And what a fun way. Like, oh, yeah. One of my favorite scenes from that is like, it wasn't their meet cute, right? Because they sort of met a little bit at the end of her driveway, like, they saw each other. But it's when she's like drinking wine and like having one of those moments that you, and I feel like, again, every woman has been there, where you're sort of at this like turning point in your life and you're like, you got your music on and you're just hanging out by yourself, maybe you're dancing or whatever. But for her, she was naked in a hot tub, spilled her wine, broke the glass.
I literally was like, this is amazing. I literally love it.
he walks up and she's like, hears her screaming, and he walks up and she's literally bleeding and soaking wet and naked. Like, what a great meet cute.
we gotta go somewhere from here, pal. Because right? He's naked and bleeding. The last question involving this book, in the acknowledgments, which I always read because I feel like they're very important, you said something about how you've said something that I've always been curious about. You believe in like many paths to love, either right, neither right or wrong. And have you always felt that way, or did something like, you know, like something like your divorce, like change that way, the saw that you saw things?
Can you repeat the first part of the question? Sorry. Let's start over.
sure. You're fine. So in the acknowledgments of this book, which I read because I love them, you said something that I've been super curious about. You believe that there are many paths to love and that neither are right or wrong. And have you always felt that way, or did something like happen personally, like your divorce or something of that nature, that changed the way you saw things?
Yeah, that's a great question. It definitely came later in life, right? When I was younger, I was sipping the Disney Princess Fairy Tale Kool-Aid, and I just felt like, and I grew up in a small town, like we've talked about. So I felt like there was one path. It's like you graduate and either you go to college and then get married, or you get married straight away and then you get the house and then you have the kids and whatever. And that's what you do. And you stay with this one person forever, and that's your person. But what I didn't consider is that sometimes you marry the wrong person, or sometimes you think you found someone who is great for you, and maybe they are at that time in your life, and then you start to grow apart, right? And it's not as easy as just like, oh, let's push through this together, if you're now married or in a relationship with someone that you don't even recognize anymore, right? Or that makes you feel like you've got to be somebody that you're not. I was just going to say, like, that's not even the only path, right? Like, I mean, that's one that can happen, and or two, I guess, that I've mentioned, but there's also, like we talked about, you can spend time on yourself for decades and then try to find love if you want it. Or sometimes you're trying actively not to find love, yes, and it finds you.
I mean, I think, and I feel like people, I just feel like people think that, like, when you say like, oh, you know, I've been divorced, or like, I've been with this person forever and we've went our separate ways, they're like, oh, like, that's like a failure. And it's like, no, yep. Like, if I got married, you know, today, and then 5 years from now, who am I going to be in 5 years? Like, what if that person is not compatible with the person that I have married? And I don't think there's anything wrong with realizing that you've outgrown somebody and that mm-hmm. you feel like you need to like continue to grow separately, because I've always told like everybody, including my dad, who's like, Lord Jesus, love him to death, but God almighty. So I've always told him, I was like, if you know, when I get married, like when I am married and stuff like that, I don't ever want to feel like I'll have to stay with that person my whole life, because if I start to outgrow them or we are not growing anymore, there's no reason why we should be together. Cause like, why be miserable the rest of your life when there's like a whole new
girl. That was the thing, right? And you'll see that reflected in Revelry. Was like a big part of me admitting to myself and to my ex-husband that like this was the right thing to do, was just admitting like, we're not happy. We have not been happy. And why are we spending our lives being unhappy? Like, yeah. you know what I mean? Like, this makes no sense. And it's like, you will be happier on the other side of this, and so will I. And it doesn't diminish anything that we've had. It doesn't mean that what we had wasn't great and important and valuable in so many ways. It just means that now, like, it's not what's right for us. And I will say, like, you know, if you've been in a relationship, if you're listening to this and you're married and you've been married a long time, or even just in a relationship with someone a long time, there are ebbs and flows, there are ups and downs, and you are tested, right? You're tested in every step of your relationship. And there are some things that you push through together as a team, and you come out, and maybe someone loses their way a little bit, but you stand by their side and you pull them back. But there are other situations where it's like you hit a fork and I took the right path and he took the left path. And it's like, there is no meeting in the middle. These, like, we are now on two completely separate paths that can no longer cross. Yeah. And so we have no choice but to either stay miserable and together, or to let each other go to find joy. And it's like, in my opinion, that's not even like a decision. That's like, you should already know that you should always reach for joy, you know?
I could literally listen to you talk all day. Like, I could literally listen to you talk all day.
I'm loving this.
Okay, so we're going to talk about your new release. The Pain, I have not read it yet. Okay. I have not read it, in the middle of a work in progress. So The Pain in Loving You is your latest release. Can you tell us a little bit about that without, you know, giving away spoilers or anything?
It's up to you. So here's the thing. So you have read The Pain in Loving You, or at least part of it. So The Pain in Loving You is actually a box set of my other works. So it includes A Love Letter to Whiskey, Weightless, and Make Me Hate You. And so it's all my like super angst fest books put into one box set, and it's the pain in loving someone, right? And so that's where the title of the box set came from. Now, what's special about this box set that I haven't done in the past is that if you are an audiobook listener, which if you're listening to a podcast, I assume you probably enjoy audiobooks as well. You can get all three books for one Audible credit. So that's kind of like what the purpose was to sort of offer my Audible listeners a little treat and everything. So yeah, so it's a box set and you can read three of my like most well-known books, my Angst Fests, or listen to them, totally up to you, or get the really pretty paperback. It's a thick boy, like real thick.
Yeah. So. Oh my God. I already have I have all of those. Oh my God, I'm gonna buy it.
Yeah.
Like, you're like all in like one little unit. Oh my God, I love that. I did not know.
Okay. But since it's a box set, let me tell you a little bit about Close Quarters, which is coming out soon. How's that?
Yes, please go ahead. Tell me.
Okay. So Close Quarters is it comes out February 18th. Mm-hmm. And the cover reveals February 1st. And I'm so excited. Close Quarters. My heroine Aspen, she is over in Spain with her boyfriend, mm-hmm. and her boyfriend works on yachts. He's worked on yachts for years, right? And he is about to sail the Mediterranean for the summer for a yacht job. Now they just graduated, and Aspen is a photographer. She wants to be a street photographer, and her like lifetime dream is to be in Life magazine. So she's like, I'm just gonna, while you're working, I'm gonna go solo backpack through Europe and get pictures, right? And we'll meet up and we'll fly back to the States together. However, she gets on the boat for a tour. Her boyfriend Joel takes her on a tour, whatever, and she's feeling a little queasy, so he goes to find her medicine, and then his boss walks on board, Theo Whitman.
Oh no!
And Theo Whitman is a billionaire, alpha, badass, gets anything he wants. And he takes one look at Aspen and guess what he wants?
Oh no, I want today.
So I'll leave it at that. I love this book so much. It's actually with my beta readers right now, and I'm getting like feedback that I haven't had in a long time, like the kind of angst that makes them reminds them of a love letter with you, right?
Oh my God.
Which to me is like my crown jewel. So
I'm gonna survive. So yeah. I'm gonna survive it. Oh my God, I'm so excited. Oh my, I'm literally so excited. Hold up, let me jot this down in my little calendar over here.
Her talking about February. That gives me all the below the deck feels.
I have literal chill bumps.
Yes, that's so exactly it. That's exactly it.
I have been talking an entirety of too much. So Stevie, why don't you just take us on to reading questions?
Let's see. Do you read the same genre you write in?
I do read romance. I really enjoy reading romance, and I'm definitely like MJ said, I prefer the angst. Like when I am going to read something, I will either go into my reader group or go to my TBR and pick out the ones that I've heard are really angsty, because that's what I love. And I also read for friends, right? Like I've never missed a Stacey Hart book. I've read all of her books. And even though she writes romantic comedies, and like Carla Sorensen, Brittany Cherry, I have a lot that I read frequently. However, I also really love psychological thrillers. I love young adult, especially like fantasy or dystopian.
Same person.
And I actually, when I was in college, I studied writing nonfiction. So I really enjoy reading nonfiction as well. And I love to write it. I just haven't published anything of that variety yet. It's a little more personal, so it takes a little more time. I'm a bookworm at heart, like through and through.
I like it. Is there an author that you look up to?
Oh man, there are so many authors that I look up to. I mean, Brittany Cherry, who I just mentioned, she inspires me in every way, not just as a writer, but as a human being. She's just such a lovely light in this community and in this world. So I really look up to her.
How you feel about her is how I feel about you.
I love it. That's so sweet. That truly means so much to me, because, you know, like, and no matter how long I do this, right, I still wake up every single day and feel like I'm that 23-year-old girl who was writing like 9 o'clock to midnight every night, just trying to make this dream come to life. And so to hear that anybody looks up to me is like it floors me in like the best way. So thank you.
Oh, no problem. Anytime.
Do you have a favorite book?
I have many favorite books. The Catcher in the Rye was like has been that title holder forever. But mm-hmm. since we're talking about romance books, my favorite romance book is Thoughtless by S.C. Stevens.
We talk about this all the time
because he loves this book. I haven't read it yet.
What?
I'm sorry, don't
you? You are not outlived until you jump on this Kelly and Kyle train.
I haven't read it yet.
I will tell you this, from what we've talked about in this podcast alone, you will become crazy obsessive with this book just like I did. Like, I stayed up till 4 o'clock in the morning to finish the first one and then promptly went to BookTube and watched like trailers that readers had made, like fans had made, and all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, this was the first time that I felt wrapped up in a fandom before, where I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't get enough of these books and these characters. And this is a slight spoiler, but like one of the scenes that I will never forget and that I have bookmarked, I literally still go back to and read, is when she is sitting on the couch with Kellen, and it's before anything has happened. And like, it's the band is just like drunk and like being silly and whatever, and they're hanging out and they put on porn. Yep. And she's sitting next to him and there's porn on the TV, and he's like, his like lips part, and he starts breathing a little bit heavier, and she starts feeling like all of this stuff coming from him, and there's all this angst and tension between them, but she has a boyfriend who's like in the band with him, so like, or like rooms with him, not in the band, but like is his roommate.
This is hot.
And oh my god, and I'm just like, I could not breathe, and I still go back and read that scene, because to me, like, S.C. Stevens nailed in the very like beginning, in the birth of indie romance, she nailed angst. Like, she is the angst mother. Like,
she birthed to all of us.
She did. She is the reason that there is like an angst squad that is so strong in our community.
Yeah. You think the D-Bags were a real band?
I need to read it.
You would really think the D-Bags were a real band.
Oh yeah,
how much I loved that book. I reread those books all the time because they're my favorite thing since sliced bread.
I agree. So amazing.
What makes you love a book?
Oh man, there's a lot of different things. I will say, like, as much as I love angst, right? That for me, obviously, if you give me that gut wrenching, like I feel like I'm going to be sick feeling, then you've won my heart. Like, that's what I look for in a book when I'm reading it and when I'm writing it. But I just have a real appreciation for craft. So especially with indie romance, right? There's a lot, and I don't mean this in any sort of like negative or derogatory way, but there are a lot of books and authors that I would consider a dime a dozen, meaning like I can pick up their book and then pick up a book that is written by somebody else, and it's like reading the same thing. It's kind of cotton candy, kind of fluffy, kind of formulaic. I know exactly what I'm getting. Anytime I read a romance and I am surprised either by the level of the author's writing or by the storyline or the character or whatever, if you surprise me, I will never forget that book or that reading experience. I just recently read Gianna Darling for the first time. And I adore her, right? And we were friends on social media, and I just think she's such a sweet, bubbly, kind person. I loved, you know, just her, what she puts out into the world. And I was like, you know, I really want to read her. So I'm not a motorcycle club person. I don't like MC, not
what
a fan.
Did you read?
I know. I read, her newest one, not the one that came out in December.
Welcome to the Dark Side, Inked and Locked.
Inked and Lies, thank you.
Nova and Lila. Oh.
Yes, Flower Child.
Flower Child, oh my God, Nova is the, oh my God.
And
sexy.
I messaged her after reading like the first two chapters, I think, and I was like, excuse me, you did not tell me that you were a literary genius. Why have you been holding out on me?
wait till you read Dead Man Walking. It is so just like, elevated, like literally, like it's insane how like And if you like psychology, if you like nonfiction, you will love this book. It's like nonfiction, psychology, thriller, romance, MC. All
of it together. I know that the listeners can't see this, but you should see MJ's hand signals as she was like meshing it all together. It's great.
Italian, so my hands move a lot. Okay.
I love that. I love that. An Italian with a southern accent.
Oh yeah. That's from my mom's side. My mom's French Italian and my dad is like country. So
yeah, I love it.
That's great. It's a fantastic combination.
Love it.
What's a trope you rarely read but wish you did?
Rarely read but wish I did. Well, you know, okay, so this just recently came up too. I've never got into mafia, and I know that like mafia is huge and everybody loves the mafia, and I cannot get into it. I tried one by a pretty well-known author and I enjoyed her writing, but the mafia stuff just took me out of it. And I was like, ugh, I'm not interested in this. I don't like it. I'm not, whatever. And there's a book right now that Angie from Angie's Dreamy Reads is like geeking out over. I think the author is Lori Danielle. And it's like My Sweet Obsession. And she was talking about how it's like a super angst fest and she's obsessed with it and she can't stop thinking about it. And I'm like, I need that in my life. But I just am not a mafia fan. So I'm like, do I push past it and try it anyway? Like, I wish that I loved mafia because I feel like there's a lot of great angsty stuff in mafia stories, but I can't get past the, like, I'm just not a mafia fan thing.
It's hard to get into mafia. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily call myself like a, like, if I read a book and it's in like the plot is good and I like the characters, then I will like the mafia book. But it's not like I go through like my TBR and I'm like, I want to read mafia
today. Yeah.
it's a hard thing to get into because I feel like it's really difficult to relate to, you know, because like I've never been in a mafia before.
Right. That's the thing too. So I read The Kiss Thief by LJ Shin and I really liked that one. But it had the mafia thing just kept taking me out of it. Like I loved the two main character stories and I loved the angst and like it's like a Beauty and the Beast kind of, like, she's forced to live with him and like she's forced to marry him and all these things, and like I loved all of that. But anytime the mafia stuff and like the drama of like people getting killed and police chief stuff came in, I was just like, ugh, I like skip over it. I don't even
care. Have you ever read Saffron Kent?
Yeah, I read half of, like, I think it was her debut novel or her second novel. I really did enjoy it, but I haven't picked her up since.
Okay, so she wrote a book called My Darling Arrow, which is, like her most recent book in her St. Mary's series. And if you like angsty, like, pull at your heart, tempting moral obligations of a relationship, that's epic. It's
okay.
So good. It's so good. It's like a older sister's boyfriend.
Ooh,
yeah. Nice. Yeah, it's okay. Epic. And Arrow is, oh god. Arrow is like, I don't even have words for him. He's like an asshole, but like, I don't even know. He's just amazing. It's amazing.
Older sister's boyfriend just always makes me think of Jessica Hawkins and Lake and Manning. Oh my god.
God. Yes.
Obsessed.
But yes, you can totally pick it up. It's really good. I recommend it.
Okay, cool.
Final question. What's the first book that ever made you cry?
Oh, man. You know, the first book, I feel like I remember when I was younger being emotional over books. Like, I'm pretty sure I cried when I read Harry Potter, like certain Harry Potter installments and stuff. But romance-wise, the one that I remember first got me was The Fault in Our Stars.
Oh, yeah. Of course. You got everybody.
Everybody, right?
You cry during that book, then you are not human.
I agree. And I just, like, the writing in that was superb. And, you know, I was still a young writer myself when that came out. Like, I was really finding my voice. And when I read that book, I just, like, I remember closing it and, like, looking at myself in the mirror and being like, you can do better. Like, challenge yourself, push yourself. If you want to be like a writer that you as a reader would look up to and admire and like be an automatic one-click author, then you've got to step outside of your comfort zone and write the things that really matter to you. It was like the first time that I dropped, like, I would say my first four books were what I call fluffy angst. It's like, yeah, there was angst in there. And yeah, there was like some tension and stuff, but it was kind of rom-com-y, kind of fluffy, kind of formulaic. And it wasn't until Waitlist that I said, I want to write something that's important to me, something that fills me with more. Mm-hmm. And I haven't stopped writing like that since then. I don't think I ever could again.
Gonna have this on replay as like my mantra when I get unmotivated.
Yeah.
I would like to, so I guess for coming, I don't even know how to explain what I'm about to say, but I'm gonna try to. So like, I feel like for me, when I read people like, well, you obviously, and like Monica Robinson and Saffron Ken and people who I feel like are like very like angsty romance writers, when I have got to read you guys, and so that is kind of like, yeah, I need to get my shit together. Like, this is we gotta pack a punch here. And so when I write angst, I write, I don't like realistic angst. Like, if a billionaire is on the side of the road and his tire's flat, I'm not gonna cry for the dude.
But right. Yeah.
I write, I think when I started it, I wanted to write things that like meant something to people. So like, I deal with like a lot of mental illness and like suicide and like drug abuse and addiction and like stuff like that. Things that people can relate to and like need to like, and can show like people like overpowering it and how that, yes, you can find love through that, but it doesn't like heal your demons or like heal your mental illness. And so that's what my main focus is for every single book I write, is whatever topic that I'm dealing with, is that I show that yes, you can find love in this situation, but it doesn't mean that love was like this cure all. Because I feel like a lot of people, like not a lot of people, I feel like some people do that. And I think it's a really bad thing for young girls or even young men who read to be like, oh, if you fall in love with somebody, you know, your depression is cured or your bipolar disorder is healed. And it's like, right. No. It's like, you can love somebody with that and you can have a great relationship, but it's never not going to be there. It's like a part of it.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing too, is like, you know, there are a lot of people who have told me to my face at signings, like, oh, I don't want to read your book because I read romance to escape into a fantasy. I don't want to read about real things. I don't want to read about romance that's going to make me cry and whatever. And I respect that. I respect that a lot of people pick up romance to escape and to sort of like, you know, get swept up in the romantic feelings or in the comedy of it, or just in those feelings of falling in love, right? Falling in love is fun. But then there are those sick, twisted weirdos like us who really like to have.
I mean, it's fine. I think you can get swept up in like the realistic feel of falling in love with what love really looks like in all its forms. And so I think that's what you do very well. And I aspire to do very well one day. But moving to writing questions, which I'm going to do this one. I feel like I talk way too much. It's fine. So, writing questions. Your love of storytelling, where did that come from? Have you always been like a writer? Like, you always knew that you wanted to be one, or like, what happened? Like, did a book hit you in the head and you were like, yep.
Yeah. I fell in love with reading really young, but I think third grade was the first time that I started writing poetry about boys, right? So not much has changed. And in fourth grade was the first time I read the first Harry Potter book. And I remember finishing it and I went home and I told my mom, I said, forget it. I don't want to be a rock star anymore. I don't want to be a veterinarian anymore. I am going to be J.K. Rowling when I grow up. And it was like, that was it. And from that moment on, I mean, I went into middle school and I started writing my own newspaper and distributing it to the school. Like, I would print it on my mom's old ass printer, which y'all are probably too young to even know what I'm talking about. But like, there were these little hole strips on the side that you had to like tear off. And then like, there was like a yellow copy and a white copy.
Oh, yes.
And, like,
I know what you're talking about.
And I used Comic Sans and like, you know, made it in Word and stuff. And anyway, and then in high school, I did creative writing. I was the yearbook editor. I was on the newspaper. I really thought that I was going to go into journalism. And when I went to college, I was studying both advertising and public relations was one major. And then I had creative writing. And I really took to nonfiction writing. In fact, like my professors who know that I write romance now, they're shocked. They're like, I can't believe that this is where you ended up. Not that they, you know, are upset about it by any means, but they're just like, you were so profound with like your nonfiction that it's interesting to me that romance was what ended up speaking to you in the end. But I love to write about, you know, the human experience. And when I was in college, I didn't really understand how to talk about it through fictional characters. So I just talked about my own life, right? Like it was easy for me to sit down and write about growing up in a small town, growing up around addiction, growing up with a single mother, growing up with, you know, like toxic relationships coming in and out of the house. Like there's so many things, right? Yeah. But when I graduated and I was back to reading for pleasure again, I read 50 Shades of Grey. And yes. I loved it. I was obsessed. And so I went online and said, okay, I said, I just read this. What should I read next? And one of my friends from high school said, I don't know if you've tried indie romance, but pick up the Perfect Game. Or is it the Perfect Game by Jay Sterling.
Yeah.
And girl, oh man.
Jack Carter.
And I read that book, and I remember I read Jillian Dodd, I read a few others, and I just was like, I had this leaky faucet of an idea for Tag Chaser, and I was like, man, I should just write this, and as a New Year's resolution, I'll publish it and just like see what happens, just like to see what, you know, what happens. And then it was like that leaky faucet turned into like a rushing waterfall that has just not stopped.
Yeah. So I think my favorite thing ever to tell people is that, so when I was in high school, I had an English teacher, and I'm not going to name her, but one day I might. Like, if I ever become, like, real big, I'm going to be like, yeah, calling you out, lady. So I think that, because I had this English teacher that she did not like me for some reason. It's probably because I talk a lot, but it's fine. So she did not like me, and she had us write the ending to this short story, and it's called like The Tiger and Something, The Princess, I think it's what's called. And so she had us write the ending to it because it ends in a cliffhanger. And I remember she was like, you can write it from the point of view of like the princess or the prince or, you know, like whoever you want, right? And I sat down and I was like, I'm gonna write it from the point of view of the tiger. And so,
yeah,
so that's what I did. And she made me, like, she was, like, gonna embarrass me. Like, she wanted me to get up and read it in front of class, right? Because she just didn't like me. There was just something about her that, I don't know, we did not get along. And so she made me get up, and I read it in front of class, and she was like, wow, that was really good. And I was like, now that I know that one of people that don't like me said it was good,
yes,
I could do this.
Yeah. Just like that validation.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, you know what, that's it. And I think that was like the biggest moment for me. Like, I've always loved reading and I've always loved writing, but I think that was like the big moment for me where I was like, yeah, that's it, this is what I want to do forever, for the rest of my life. My for sure.
I love that.
So for you, what does a typical day of writing look like? Like, do you try to hit a word count? Is there a fixed schedule, an outline? You like fly off the seat of your
head? Oh man. So when I was working full time, which I was up until, I didn't quit my job until after I published Revelry, and I left my full time job a little bit after that. So for the first 8 books that I wrote, I would work and work out and cook dinner and take care of stuff at home and whatever, and then I would sit down and write usually around 7:38, maybe 9 depending, and just write until my eyes were like bleary, and then go to sleep and get up and do it all again. I used to love writing at night. I really did. And now I am so opposite, because right, this is my job, and I have found that I am the freshest first thing in the morning. So for me, a typical day is like, I'll take my dog for a walk, I'll meditate, I do some journaling and drink my coffee and stuff like that, read some poetry. And then I immediately jump into writing, because nothing has happened in my day yet, right? There's been no chance for anybody to like dump their shit on me. There's been no chance for like, there's no news going on. Like, nothing has happened. I'm in my nice little bubble. I have woken up. I've been on a nice walk. I've meditated. I've done whatever. I've done all these great things. And so I sit down and I write. And it, as far as like what my goal is that day, it depends. Sometimes early on, usually it's a word count goal. And then as I get toward the middle to end of the book, it becomes a scene or chapter goal where I can kind of see what's left. And I'm like, okay, this is what I want to achieve today. And I usually write until 1 or 2 in the afternoon. So I'll take the morning up until 1 or 2, depending. And then I spend the rest of the day doing like marketing and social media and emails and podcasts and stuff like that. And then I go pole dance and it's great. That's where I release all of my frustrations at night.
I think that's so bad.
Like, it is class? Incredible. Yes. Yes. So I started taking pole dance fitness like 2.5 years ago and I am so in love. It has like changed my life, like changed who I am. I am so confident and strong now. And like, I feel so good in my skin, which I feel like as women, we go through a lot of shit in our childhood and in our early adulthood that like really makes us feel a lot of different things about ourselves, none of them being good. So like, this was kind of my take. I'm taking this back. I'm taking all of my confidence back and my strength back and like my solidarity and like my solidity, excuse me, and who I am. So anyway, it's fantastic. It's super fun. It's really freaking hard, but so fun.
Okay, this is like TMI, but I don't even care because I'm super open about it. It doesn't matter. So my mom was a stripper back in the day.
Ooh.
So yeah, that's actually how my mom and dad met. It's so cute. It's like a meet cute.
Oh.
So
that is awesome.
So that's actually how they met. But yeah, so my mom was a stripper back in the day. And I remember telling her, I think I was like 18 and I was like, I want to take a pole dancing class. And she thought that I was like gonna be a stripper. I was like,
of course.
No. I was like, no, I don't have rhythm. And I was like, I want to take it for like exercise, mother.
Yes.
And
yes.
She was like, Jesus, give me a
pain. I know. Back. My mom was stressed out too when I first told her, and my stepdad was like, excuse me. I mean, are you trying to tell us like, are your books not doing well anymore? And I'm like, no, it's not that. But now my mom, like, I will send her my routines and like stuff that I work on in class and she's just like living for it. So, it's cool. It's really cool. There's a new show coming out on Netflix. So, if anybody listening is curious about it, you should watch it when it comes out. I think it's Strip Down, Rise Up is what it's called. So keep an eye out for that.
I want to try it. So last writing question, I feel like this is really important. How do you handle negative feedback?
Oh man. If you would have asked me this question 5 years ago, it would have been a completely different answer. I was very, very tender in the beginning of my career, very tender and very defensive. Mm-hmm. I was like, I had beta readers and they would tell me something that they wanted change or something they thought would be different. And instead of like accepting their feedback and thinking about it and wondering like, why did they give me that feedback? How do I address it? Like, whatever. I would just be like, no, don't you understand? This is why I did it that way. Here is my character. I don't understand what you're not getting. And they're like, no, I get what you're saying, but like, that didn't come across in the book. And I'm like, okay, but like, now you know. And they're like, yeah, but you don't get to talk to your readers, right? Anyway, so I learned a lot. I see you covering your face, so I'm assuming that you're much like me.
I'm blessed that I have an alpha reader. Her name is Melissa. I talk about her on this podcast all the time. And she's like, God, you got to stop shouting me out like that. My husband's going to listen to this podcast and be like, Jesus. But Melissa is such like, I'm so thankful for her because I think she's getting that out of the way for me. Because when I first started writing, I was like, you know, I was very like that. And then she is so blunt and so honest. Like, she loves my writing. And she's like, yeah, you know, the writing's great. She's like, but this isn't coming across the way you want it to. And I'm like, but see, this is why I did it. And she's like, it doesn't matter. She's like, yeah. This is how it's, yep. This is not how you can do it however way you want to. But I'm telling you that it's not coming across this direction.
But like, see, it's readers, it's people like Melissa on your team that will make you a better writer and that will be the difference between you having a mediocre book and having an excellent book. Because here's the thing, if you're listening to this and you're a writer or you're thinking about writing, you don't be one of those people who has what I call cheerleader betas, meaning you have a beta team, right, of like 10 people and you send them your book and they write back and say, oh my gosh, it's amazing. There's nothing to fix. You're fantastic. Wow. Congratulations. Just hit publish now. Right. Because as I don't even know if it was actually him that said it or if maybe it was born before it, but I think it was Ernest Hemingway who said the rough draft of anything is shit, right? The first draft of anything is shit. Okay. And if you for one second feel like your first pass at a book is the best that it can be, like, just stop it. You just need to, like, yes, sit down and be real with yourself, you know? So it took, I had to let my guard down. I had to put my little tender heart, you know, aside and just say, okay, as a writer who wants to be an even better writer,
yep,
how do I take this feedback and apply it, right? And even if I don't agree with it, where's the miscommunication? How did they end up seeing it this way while I wanted it to be this way, whatever the case may be? And I do that with negative reviews too. Like, some one-star reviews are just like, I didn't like your book, right? And I can't help, yep, them. If they don't like angst, if they thought the characters were dumb, whatever. But if I get a one-star review or whatever, a two-star review even, that says something that is applicable, something that I can take and apply to my future writing, I will, because any writer can grow, any writer can be better, no matter how good you think you are or someone tells you you are. So you have to be open to that. So yeah, back in the day, I was not receptive to critical feedback. Now I like live and breathe that shit. Like, I want people to tell me why I suck.
Yes. And so, like, Melissa's the best. And like, I have this habit, and I think this is like my dad in me. I'm a pessimist. So everything I write, I feel like is shit. 10 drafts in, it's shit.
Oh my God, you are awful at that.
And so I hate it. And so I'll have, you know, like, it's like the last draft. It's like arcs are out or whatever. And people are like, oh, this is, you know, really good, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, oh, they're lying. They're lying. It's bad. I know it. I feel it.
You are so much like my, so Stacey Hart is the same way. She, mm-hmm, will like rip her rough draft apart and edit it and edit it and edit it. And even when it's like the most beautiful gemstone of a like book that I've ever read in my life, she doesn't believe it. Even when like, when her beta readers tell her, when ARC readers tell her, when the reviews start coming in and they're all 5 stars, she's like, nah, they're lying. I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
Yeah, it's like, I don't believe it. But it's like, thank you. I'm glad that you enjoy it. I really appreciate it. I feel like, yeah, it's shit. But like, right. I feel like if I tell myself that, I won't be disappointed if it really is.
Like, yeah, I was gonna say, I think that's sort of a defense mechanism or like a protective, mm-hmm, way to think about it, right? Is like, oh, well, if anybody attacks me, well, I already knew that it wasn't great, you know? Yeah. So I totally get that.
So I'm gonna have to grow from that. But as of right now, I feel. So we are going to move on to trope questions, which is the last portion of our podcast. Sadly, okay, we literally talked to you for like 8 hours. So what is your favorite trope to write and why? You can't say angst.
Oh, I know. I was just thinking that. I'm like, I can't say angst. I really love to write love triangles or like, I guess like morally ambiguous, I don't know if that's a trope, but like love affairs, triangles, things like that. But if we're talking about like really tropey, sports romance, I guess, is that considered a trope? I guess that's pretty tropey.
It's definitely.
But for me, it's like, no matter what I write, it's just gotta be forbidden or have some sort of like element in it. The only book I think I've ever written that didn't have that is The Right Player. And I loved it. So like The Right Player is like my most rom-commy book, yeah, ever, and it's because it's Belle, right? Like, Belle's, yeah, freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
And so you take this like badass girl who like is like, I can't be bothered by love and relationships, like I don't have time for that, whatever, I'm not into it, yeah. And then you take this like beastly wide receiver who's like ripped and super hot, and he's like this softy romantic teddy, like, bear at heart. Oh my God, yes. I love them.
They were great. I loved that book. I really did. Belle is just like, God, I aspire to be as bad.
She's my girl. Okay, what's next?
What's one outside of the box trope you'd love to write?
Ooh, a trope I'd love to write. You know, gosh, that's a hard one. Hang on, I'm thinking.
Soundboard pause for thinking.
Yes, I know, thank you. Yeah, I'm like, are you guys gonna edit this? So I guess the first thing that pops to my mind, and I have written it before with Sydney, is like a single parent, but I want to write a single dad, like really bad. I am like dying to write a single father, and I think it's gonna happen this year. Like, I have a book that has been brewing, and with any of my books, by the time you read it, it has been in my heart and soul for approximately 7 years. Like, I have a 7-year process before I can actually write a book.
I love the idea of you doing a single dad. So I was raised by a single father, right? And so I want to write one eventually, right? Because I don't know, like being the product of a single dad, I have very masculine tendencies because that's like literally the only parent I really knew growing up until I got into like past my impressionable years. And then that's when my mom and I started to like rebuild our relationship. And by that point I had already like developed mannerisms and stuff like that. And like this mentality of like, can't beat them, join them.
Right.
And so I would love to write a single father. Like in Love and Hockey, the first book I wrote, the dad is a single dad and the daughter deals, and the main character deals with like her mom not being in her life. And so everybody loved JR. And I was like, that's my dad. I was like, you guys would love my dad. And I would love to write, I guess, like his love story, because he's been married like 3 times. The man just loves love. So it's like, he's been married like 3 times. He's got 8,000 kids. So I love the idea. Yeah, please write a single dad.
You too. We should make a pact that this year we at least start writing our single dad romance.
Yes. Yes. I definitely am going to try to do that. And then what is one trope that you will never write? Ever. Like not even close to.
I don't think I will ever write a secret baby. Like, I am just not a secret baby fan. I can't. I'm sorry, Stevie.
I love secret babies. I don't know what it is. I just like them so much.
You know, there's a lot of readers who do, and I have a lot of colleagues who love to write the secret baby. And I think it's because I'm not a mother myself. I'm actually still undecided. Like Jack and I talk about, Jack is my boyfriend. We talk about this all the time. Like, we could totally see a life of having kids and also completely see a life not having kids. And so I think it's really hard for me to like get into the mindset of a character who's pregnant and then let alone it being a secret or already having like had a child and then like not telling him for years or whatever. I mean, I don't even fully understand the trope. That's how much I avoid it.
Andy and I have met in a past life.
we haven't posted this episode yet. It goes live tomorrow. Nikki Ash is like the queen of writing secret babies.
Babies. So you're saying if I give a secret baby a chance, it needs to be Nikki Ash?
Yes, it needs to be her fighting series.
I would definitely say that. She's like queen of secret babies. All of them are secret babies.
She has an MMA series that was like three of the books were secret. No, what? For the first two were secret babies, but they were all secret babies.
Yeah.
Most of them. And he's one of those writers who can write, who has written the kids of the first generation and now is on the
brain.
Oh my God. She's
my brain could never. Over here could never. All right. And our last trope question, Stevie is going to take it.
If you were in a book, what trope would you want to be in?
Oh, if I was in a book, I mean, billionaire, like, so here's the thing. I have never written a billionaire romance before. And Close Quarters was my first one, right? That's the book that's about to come out.
Yeah.
And what I loved about it was like it's not my love language, but it was very cool to flip into that, like, average girl being spoiled mindset. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, never had these things. And like, all of a sudden you have all these things unlocked for you. And like this guy who just wants to like dote on you and like literally can get anything, like can just snap his fingers and have whatever you want.
I already told him I love this because he's going to have to learn that that's not how you buy her heart.
That's right.
I know it. I feel it.
Listen, I will say though, if you've ever read any of my books, I know in marketing, I've got to tell the reader what they're getting. So I try really hard to say what trope my book is. But the problem is that I feel like I can't write a true trope. Like if you go into my book and you're like, oh, this is going to be, friends to lovers, and I've read this a million times. It's not going to be like the friends to lovers that you've read. Cause I don't know how, like, So this billionaire romance, if you're a billionaire romance fan, please don't hang me up to dry if it's not like everything that your billionaire romance heart loves. It's probably going to be different. It's definitely going to be angsty. And there's a little bit of mystery in there too, which I love.
Literally the book I'm working on now, like I'm almost done with it. I got about a week out before I have to start like hardcore edits. But like the book that I am working on now, so my PR person Shauna was like, I love her, Shauna, I love you so much, I'm so glad you put up with me, but literally she was like okay, so what do you want to advertise the trope as? And I was like, well we could do this, but it's not really that, it's kind of like this. So depending on how you do it, because I was like, it's like single mom, but it's kind of not like a single mom, you know,
so yeah,
like a secret baby, but it's not a secret baby. So she was like, just pick one. And I was like, just do Unrequited. That's literally what we're going to put it underneath. Like, I don't know what else you want me to tell you. So
I know it's so hard. It's so hard to do, to figure out a trope, especially when it's like, you know, like you and I were talking about, we write from our heart and we write about things that are so real. So it's really hard. I think it guts us a little bit to try to sum up how big our story is with like a trope, when it feels like a trope feels almost like a slap in the face to me. I'm like, yeah, it's a sports romance, but it's so much more than that. You know,
like, how do I put all of this? How do I put like this addiction and this mental health and this brother underneath this one umbrella? I can't do it. I cannot do it.
No,
but that is our last question for you, sadly. However, we have had such a fun time and it has been so amazing talking to you. And it's like crazy that you're just as inspiring, like talking to you as you are, like as you come across on like social media and like in your books. So like, congratulations on not only being a great author, but like a fantastic person. So
thank you. This is really fun. Thank you for having me on. I do a lot of podcasts. And this one was refreshing in the best way. Like, I loved that we had some different kind of questions and different topics. And, you know, I wish you all the luck and I hope you get a million listeners and, you know, just like blow up in the podcast atmosphere.
Thank you.